Can we turn to something that's been said about Hillary Clinton since at least 92, when she and Bill Clinton became global figures? There's something about her I don't like. Now, by the way, that's not an editorial statement, but given all you've experienced, what's going on with that? Have you ever put your finger on what that is?
So funny. Yes, I believe I have. I've thought a lot about it. I believe I have because we'd hear that all the time, the campaign, obviously, in 2016. So I went back to watch interviews of Hillary and about her from the 92 campaign, as you note. And it was remarkable. What I found was they did man on the street, women on the street interviews. What do you think of Bill Clinton's wife? And these people weren't mean-spirited towards her. And they just said, you know, there's just some, I don't know, there's something about her I don't like. Or, I don't know, there's something about her I don't trust. And it was remarkable because it's the same thing you hear, you know, 25 years later. And before she had, you know, done things that people think are polarizing, like, you know, the Whitewater investigation or been the first lady to work on policy in the White House and have an office in the West Wing and, you know, all of that. So I understood this is something different. This is something deeper at work here. And I think that Hillary's from the baby boomer generation. And I think that she's always stepped a little bit outside of the role that women traditionally have played. And that can vex us. That can confound us. We don't know what to make of her. That started from when she was a college student. She was on the cover of Life magazine as a college student, as the face of the baby boomer generation. And then Bill Clinton's wife, who didn't stay home and bake cookies, and, you know, the first lady that worked outside of the home. And I think that she's just all sort of vexed us, and there's no analog or model that we can compare her to. And I didn't, you know, when I started the campaign, I didn't think it was a big deal that she was a woman. I just thought she was the best person for the job. I didn't think it was going to be hard to elect the first woman or that big of a deal. And I was wrong about that. You know, when you step back and you look at it from the scope of human history, and it's still a big deal for a woman to be in charge. Women, we've only had the right to vote for, it's been less than 100 years. It's been 98 years. And women have been in the workplace. The workplace is around for centuries, but we've only been participating in the workplace and politics for the last 100 years of the centuries and centuries and centuries that's been around. So, you know, the place, it wasn't really built for us, politics and the workplace, when it was first created. And I think we're still adjusting. You know, Hillary's generation had to prove, the baby boomers, they had to prove, I can do the job just the same as a man, just the same. Nothing will be different. And, you know, like, that's not great. It should be different if a woman is in the job. We should all bring our own unique qualities. And I've always felt I can do a job the same way a man can, but I don't want to. I want to do it the way I want to do it. And I think that's what my generation gets to figure out.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, it almost sounds like you're saying, in part, that the Clinton loss can be summed up with this misogynistic line. Who do you think you are? Hillary Clinton, right?
I don't say in the book or believe that's why she lost. I think her role was made harder and just different than a man. And because we just have different questions about women candidates. You know, who do you think you are, Hillary Clinton? You know, there's a lot in that. It's a pretty loaded statement. I think it reveals an unease about this woman, this particular woman, you know, always, you know, having an ambition to do something different. And, you know, when Hillary lost, she gave her concession speech, and people really liked that speech, and it was a good speech. But I think, you know, a lot of people said to me afterwards, where was this Hillary during the campaign? Why didn't you see this side of her when it mattered? And that, in the concession speech, she's being a gracious loser. She's selflessly putting her own interests aside in support of the country, right? We like that. We're comfortable with that. And when you're running for president, you have to, like, think about it. You have to say, I want the most powerful job on the planet. And I believe I am the best person for the most powerful job on the planet. And here are all the reasons why I'm better than this other guy. And that is a hard thing for women to say. And it's a hard thing still, I think, for us to hear from a woman. That sort of, like, ambition to have the biggest, most powerful job and say why you're the best for it. And, you know, a lot of people, even those who didn't vote for Hillary, thought she could do the job, right? They did. thought she'd be confident at it, but that, you know, we still, that's progress, but still have these questions about, like, well, why does she want it? And that's why I wanted to reexamine that, those questions in the book. So for the next woman, if you hear, I don't know, Kirsten Gillibrand, there's something about her I just don't like, or Elizabeth Warren, there's something about her I just don't like, or Nikki Haley, there's something about her I just don't like. We like look a little closely at what's underneath all that.
Well, you set the table perfectly for this. What's your message to the nation's first female president when she's elected? Or is this a lot more about a message to all women, their goals, their future lives?
Yes, it is. I wrote it as a letter to the first woman president because I think that's like the height of achievement in the world. And I wanted whoever read it to know whatever it is you dream to do, you can do it, and you can do it in your way. And what I want women everywhere to understand is we need your perspective, your voice matters, we need you engaged. That's what I learned. That's what I learned in my 20 years in politics. And that, you know, the world, if you feel like, you know, just keep in mind, keep a positive attitude, but know that we still have some work to do to reach full parity in the workplace and in politics. And if you feel like something's not quite working for you, it doesn't feel right at work, you're probably right to have those doubts or that confusion because it was created, you know, it wasn't created with you in mind. So if you want to do things a little differently, you should go ahead and do that. That's what, you know, this generation gets to figure out is how women can lead in a new way and, you know, in a model that's based on themselves and not the way it's always been.
Is it much too early for me to ask you who you think has a leg up, an advantage? Would it be a Kamala Harris? Would it be Kirsten Gillibrand? Would it be Nikki Haley, yes, as long as you brought up her name?
Right. So I think that there's four or five women that I think could run on the Democratic side that any one of them could be the, you know, just it's like such a jump ball, right? Any one of them could be the nominee. Kamala Harris, I think Kirsten Gillibrand, Claire McCaskill, Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts. I think all of those women, Maggie Hassan, nobody talks about her, but Maggie Hassan from New Hampshire, talented governor, good Senator Jeanne Shaheen, also from New Hampshire. So there's a lot. And then on the Republican side, you have, you know, people talk about Nikki Haley. There's other Republican governors that are women that, you know, they, you know, could decide to buck the party and take on the sitting president. So I just think what I, like I said before, when we first started talking, I really think whoever it is, they need to be somebody who's going to unite the country. And, you know, that's what I'm looking for.
I know if I were to have asked you this question a day or two after the election, you know, the feelings would be far too raw for you to look at it perhaps analytically, or, you know, now you have the benefit of some time to look back. I wouldn't ask you if you respect anything that Donald Trump does, but do you admire what he does or what he's done to reach this point?
So, sure. I mean, he did. I think that there are valuable things that have happened in response to his presidency. I mean, there's, you know, from my perspective, there's obvious things like the Women's March and I believe Me Too movement as a response to him winning and all these women running for office. But then also, you know, there's a lot about politics that, you know, he doesn't play by the same set of, the sort of agreed upon set of rules that we have operated under for a while. He bucks them. And a lot of those rules are dumb and should be bucked. And I think, you know, a lot, too much politics had become a game and too much of what the press covered had become was about process and not actually about people. And so I think it's making us rethink how you engage in politics and how can you make it more meaningful. And that's, you know, that's a valuable thing. For some stuff he does, some of the rules that he's broken needed to go away. So that's what I, you know, that's where I see value.
You know, Jennifer, I never feel comfortable picking on anyone, a person of power or a person who's not in power. But I heard on a podcast you took part in last year with Major Garrett of CBS, always stuck with me, that you were at a Bruce Springsteen concert the night that Hillary Clinton mentioned the basket of deplorables comment, which, you know, is huge. And like I say, I'm not coming at it from a, oh, how dare you take a night off. But do you think that... Let me let you speak instead of me kind of babbling here.
So if I had not gone to see Bruce Springsteen, would she have not said basket of deplorables?
Right. Of course not. I mean, I think she still might have said it.
She might have said it still. You know, she... but I don't know. You know, I would have said... I don't know if she would have been, if I had said, remember there's press here, remember, you know, she was the thing that we didn't know at the time is she had pneumonia.
Mm.
That's right. She had been diagnosed with pneumonia that day. So I don't think she was not at her sharpest. But she also said in that, she said, you know, it can be a mistake to generalize. And yes, it is. It's a mistake to generalize, and it's a mistake to pontificate about your opponent's supporters. It's just not something you should do.
There must be so many what ifs, not just that night.
There are plenty. There's that. There's, you know, what if Jim Kimmel had sent her his letter? There's, what if we invested a lot of money and time in Arizona, Texas, and Georgia instead of trying to play the same game that Democrats have always played and win the same states they always traditionally win? You know, I think that there was, on sort of all sides, with the exception of the Trump side, a lack of imagination when it came to this last election. You know, on our part, on the part of the press, on the part of, you know, places like Facebook about, you know, what was possible that could actually happen and could go wrong, and understanding, you know, not just appreciate, I think we appreciated that the country was in a moment of great change, but, you know, having a lack of imagination about how that meant you should respond to that kind of change. That's, you know, that was my takeaway.
You're consulting now and writing, of course. If somebody asked you to take part in another campaign, would you consider it?
Oh, probably. I mean, a few months ago, I said, no, I just want to sit on the sidelines and judge everyone who does it. But it's not something I really do enjoy writing. But I like, you know, some of the work I do now is working on immigration and education issues for a group called the Emerson Collective. I'm always going to want to engage in the world. That should be a campaign.
Thank you so much for speaking with me, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.